Welcome to the Corporate Venturing Insider Series, where I interview top practitioners in the CVC world and learn with you the best practices and golden nuggets that they have accumulated over their career. In this episode, we would be learning from Sakura Hanaway, Investment Director at Future Planet Capital. Sakura, welcome.
Thank you, Nicholas. It's very exciting to be here.
So let's start with a question I always ask, which is, what's your journey into corporate venturing? And I know today we're going to use a wider definition of corporate venturing.
Sure, thank you. So yeah, my journey into venturing and investment is actually through a technology background. I'm an immunologist by training. I started my career in academic research. I think I realized very quickly on my academic journey that I wanted to be operating at the commercial end of the spectrum. So I started to explore other career opportunities where I still wanted to be very closely associated with biological sciences and close to research, but I wanted to do other things around it. So the way I got into the commercial world was actually to retrain as an IP attorney. So I'm a patent attorney, but I spent most of my IP career actually in the corporate world. So I worked for biotech companies, working alongside the research teams and the management teams in building and structuring IP portfolios, protecting innovation within the corporate organizations that I worked at, working alongside commercialization teams. So doing lots of competitive landscaping, freedom to operate, all the contingent pieces of IP work, which led to commercial deals. So there was a lot of due diligence activities for in and out licensing and also M&A activities. And one of those companies that I worked at, we actually did an IPO in the US. We did a fundraise in the US, which was a fantastic experience working for an Australian biotech, listing a company on the NASDAQ, doing a fundraise at the same time, you know, and at the same time managing all of the IP and commercial activities that was happening within the company as well. So that really piqued my interest in the investment sector. And at that point, I joined a VC in Australia, which is one of the best known venture capital firms focusing on healthcare investments in Australia. And the kind of investments we were making there was really in later stage companies. So these were clinical companies that were raising between $10 and $20 million. And what I started to realize with my kind of science, IP and commercial experience was a lot of the times you're not making investments in certain companies, not because the technology is not exciting or the team is not exciting, but there are certain things in the early stages of the company formation and the early stages of the journeys of those companies that does not necessarily make them investable at the later stages. So it made me realize that what you do in the early stages of company formation, company structuring, where you take those early investments, is really critical for a company to be successful and grow and raise more capital in the future. So that really turned my interest to working in really early stage investments. So in the last few years, I've either been working for early stage VCs or working alongside companies that are trying to raise their first VC investment. And where I am at Future Planet Capital is just perfectly positioned for me to do that. So Future Planet, we're a venture capital firm. We're based in London. We have operations in London as well as in Birmingham. And we have three funds that operate within Future Planet. We have a regional fund, which really focuses on innovation and growing the economy and businesses in the Midlands area of the UK. And then we have a national seed fund, which focuses on UK innovation, but building them for growth and success globally. And we also have a global fund, which invests in companies at slightly later stage. It can do Series A, Series B investments, but across the world. And I focus most of my time, or all of my time really, on the national seed fund.
Very nice. I have to ask, because I don't think we had an IP attorney step to anyone I've interviewed. How much of what you do today, investing early stage, how much of that time as an IP attorney is useful and maybe in guiding the companies to be careful about IP?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And it's actually something that, similar to, you know, raising your eyebrows, it raises a lot of eyebrows when I speak to founders as well. And it's definitely something that resonates with them, and that is certainly an area in the early stages of company formations that they need help. So when we talk about our value add as a team to the companies that we invest in the early days, those sorts of things are really critical, and they see the immediate value that comes with that. So in terms of how I use my IP skills and knowledge in what I do day to day. I think the kind of skills I developed from doing that was really to be able to spot red flags in something that we might be looking at. So if we're looking at a really cool technology and it's a competitive positioning and maybe a crowded marketplace, is there actually a position to be had? Is there an IP position to be had? Because at the seed stage, that's really what you're investing in. You're investing in a bit of IP and technology that still needs to go a long way in terms of being proven and developing in the market. So I think it's something that I use day to day, but I think it's probably something that's so inherent that I don't think about it. But the analytical skills that come with having worked in that area, I apply every day to what I do.
And I think it's pretty cool. We see many early stage companies that build a product, prototype, of course, and product, only to realize that it's going to be a very challenging freedom to operate space. And even if they were to patent, that doesn't give them the right to operate. So maybe you can speak a little bit so that the audience understand how important it is for early stage companies to think about the IP early on.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's a really tricky area to navigate, because I think as investors, everybody likes to ask about freedom to operate. They always want their companies to be thinking about freedom to operate and understanding the competitive positioning that they have and other third-party IP that they might be encroaching on, what they need to be aware of and what they need to be navigating. So that's very much a legal positioning. You know, is there anybody else in that space that if I was to get into the market, I would be infringing someone else's IP? That's a very specific question. I think early stage investors and also early stage companies, when we talk about freedom to operate, what we're actually talking about is competitive landscaping. Is, do you understand the landscape and the world that you're about to operate in, that you're trying to get into, that the market you're trying to create? Who else is doing something similar? Who else has got IP in this space? Who else might you need to be talking to in the early days? Because you might actually find that there's some level of co-development opportunities there. They don't have to be competitors right off the outset. You can actually think about them as having something maybe complementary. Maybe there's something we can be achieving by working together. So I think in that respect, it's really important for early stage companies to be doing that assessment of understanding where else there's IP and technology being developed that might be similar to what you're doing.
Thank you. Now I want to talk a little bit about your background, where you mentioned how closely you work with research teams. And clearly you invest in deep tech and entrepreneurs who are sometimes pure PhD, right? And then they have the technology, they're looking at the market. Can you share about your experience in the past working with research team and how useful it is today for you as an investor in technical entrepreneurs?
Yeah, absolutely. I can actually give you hopefully an amusing anecdote for that. I spent a brief period of time working in a business development capacity for a research institute early on in my commercial career. And I distinctly remember speaking to a world-renowned cancer researcher about her research. And I was in the business development team trying to see what kind of licensing opportunities or company formation opportunities there might be for her technology. And I distinctly remember her saying, I'm trying to answer these questions in a way that you wouldn't understand them, because I really don't have time to be talking to BD and I need to get on with what I need to do. And I don't, this to me is a waste of time, is essentially what she was saying. And I need you to go away, right? And so you need to have a level of curiosity in what your founders are doing, and you need to want to learn. And I really think that my career to becoming an investor, the path that I followed, I couldn't have become an IP attorney without having had the scientific background. And I couldn't have gone into commercialization without having science and IP. And I couldn't have become an investor now without having all of those pieces that stack up. And I think that's really important, because founders ultimately are very passionate about their technologies, right? So they need to know that the person that they're talking to on the other side of the table, who's an investor, is equally passionate about the technologies that they're investing in. But I think one of the other things that we do really well, and I think something that sets us apart, particularly in the National Seed Fund within Future Planet, is we have a panel of consultation members that we use while we're, you know, building our pipeline, but we're diligencing our deals and taking them through our investment process. And these individual committee members are experts in, you know, a number of different sectors and industries. So we draw on them, on their expertise in the individual spaces, to help us understand the technologies in the market as well. So it adds a huge amount of value to us as the investment team. We have a very strong investment team, and I'm really proud of being part of that team, but we still can't know everything.
Okay, so I want to double click because it sounds like a superpower where this advisory board allows you to due diligence better which startups to invest in. But once you invest it, then they can come to the support and guidance of the startups to be even more successful. Can you talk about this superpower?
Yeah, no, it's a really nice way to describe it as a superpower as well, because we certainly treat them as a superpower for us. While we're going through the investment process and diligence on the companies that we want to invest in, we use the consultation committee to help us define some of the questions that we should be asking. Sometimes all investors do this, right? We get to that point where we're so excited about something and you're such strongly convicted to something that you may not see a red flag on the side there that you should have seen, or you haven't asked one question that's really critical to the decision making, or you haven't thought about one particular angle when it comes to market positioning or something. And so it's really nice to have someone independent of your investment team to test you on that and also to help you think about that again a little bit more objectively. But even as part of that, even before we've made investments, we introduce the companies to the consultation committee members, because in terms of our kind of impact-led investment thesis, even if we decide we're not going to invest in a company, we can still add value to them. We take them through a diligence process where we're giving them active feedback all the time. We're quizzing them all the time. So it becomes part of that process for us. So we don't necessarily say that we've come to a position where we're not going to invest in you, so we're not going to continue to add value. But I think there's a power of network we can make available to companies even if we don't immediately invest in. But once we've invested, certainly the whole Future Planet family is available to our portfolio companies. We have a portfolio manager, and he's 100% dedicated to supporting our companies post-investment.
So I feel like this is a golden nugget, which is really about how you bring that value before and during the investment. I also really like what you said about bringing value even if you don't invest. So can you tell us maybe some examples, because I feel like this is a really good best practice, because at the end you're here for the entrepreneurs. And if you can be helpful even if you don't invest, you should. So maybe you can share some best practices about how you can be helpful, but yet manage your time carefully.
Yeah, excellent question. Because we all have a finite time to work with, right? And we're all bandwidth constrained, and we all always say that our team's too small to be able to support the number of people that we would like to support. So I think prioritization is obviously very important, right? And we would naturally prioritize the companies that we're actively thinking about investing in and have actively invested in. So that does take priority. But it doesn't take much time to be able to say, you're not right for us, but we know three or four people who in a similar situation to you. Let me just send an email and introduce you, because I think you would have a very meaningful conversation. And it's about creating that community. You may not invest in somebody right now, but you don't know that they're not going to create the next company that you want to invest in, or they're not going to introduce another company to you that you might want to invest in. So everything comes back in so much more value than you might feel like you're creating in the first place. And, you know, in terms of impact-led investment, that's so much more valuable to founders sometimes than purely the money that you give them.
I think building good karma really makes sense. Now, you mentioned something which we do have in TDK Ventures, which is all about engagement team and platform team. But you mentioned the role of portfolio manager. Do you mind explaining a little bit this role and what does it do to your portfolio?
Sure, yeah. So, yeah, we appointed a portfolio manager recently into the team. And the value add from having this person on the team, he's only been with us for about 4 months, but the value that he brings to the team is just astronomical. And as seed stage investors, we know that our companies are going to go through several rounds of investment. They're going to go through a long journey, and we want to be able to support them for as long as we can. But we can't participate in every round. We can't continue to invest in them. So having somebody who's actually looking after the companies and giving them the support they need without the investor, the deal lead, actually having to be involved at every round of that conversation does provide that objectivity, I think. And he's very good at handling those relationships, and it's a little bit arm's length. And I think sometimes it's also really difficult, but really important for portfolio companies to hear no. No, your seed investor is not going to invest in you in one more round. What we can do is we can look at the network of investors that we have. We can look at syndicates that we've formed before, and we can make introductions to other investors. The other things that we also do, we do invite them back in to run their business plan by us, run their pitch decks by us. We can do in terms of polishing those up and shaping those up, and also being the friendly investor because we're an existing investor. So we can help you build that narrative. So we do that as well, which is nice, I think. Our companies definitely like that.
Yeah, it's another golden nugget. We do the same at TDK Ventures. We offer to do very friendly pitch.
Absolutely. I really like the synergies between TDK and Future Planet. I think we need to work together.
We have to. Let's talk about syndicates. I think that's a good segue. How do you think about building syndicates for the rounds you invest early, but also how you think about syndicates for the next round where maybe you're not involved?
Yeah, good question. And maybe we go with the second part of that first. So when we're making an investment into companies, we're already thinking about the next round, right? We're always thinking that companies are going to graduate beyond how much we can give them, and we know how much they're going to raise at the next round. And I think it goes back to the heart of what we do, which is impact-led investment, is we want to make sure that our companies, when they're going to Series A, are thinking about who else is going to invest, that they're going to bring something to the table that doesn't exist anymore. If I'm going to have an investor represented or investment represented at the board, what do I want them to bring to the board that I don't already have around the table? We like to lead investments. And so we have a great network of investors that we've worked with time and time again, or at least have discussions with time and time again. We can, where there's real interest, we can sort of pull those syndicates in fairly quickly, which is nice.
Very nice. And I find your approach very intentional. And you mentioned is building the syndicate carefully is part of your success matrix, kind of your KPIs, which means that you're very clear that this is how you want to do it. And that's how you're going to measure success. What are the most important KPIs or success metrics you have when you think about new investments?
Yeah, we measure ourselves on a few different things. And the most important things, I think, are the boosting of UK innovation, right? So I do focus all my time on the National Seed Fund. So we are focused on UK innovation, UK companies, but we're focused on helping them grow globally. We want them to be global businesses. So it's about finding those hotspots of innovation around the UK. And it's very easy to get distracted with the Golden Triangle, Oxford, Cambridge, London, and focus on those things. But there are other areas that we, of the country that we focus on. And I think the companies that we've backed to date, we've created something like 1,100 jobs across the UK. And I think our companies have raised something like £800 million in co-investment in subsequent rounds, and numbers that we can really be proud of. Right? Our fund is continuing to grow. We're £110 million at the moment for the National Seed Fund. We're $450 million assets under management across Future Planet. So it's going to continue to grow and those numbers will go up, which is very exciting.
If clearly one of your mission is for your startup to go global, that's probably where you want to work with corporate VCs that are beyond the UK and that are global companies. So maybe this is your chance to the audience. Some of them are corporate VCs. What it is for you that you're looking for in terms of partners as corporate VCs for your startups?
For us as investors, private investors who would love to work with corporate venture, it's that openness about the strategic fit from day one that's really important. It's equally important, like founders and other investors, like if it's a no, we want to hear no quickly. If there's no strategic fit, we'd like to know quickly. But if there is a strategic fit, but it just needs a little massaging, we need to think about maybe there's a little critical proof of concept experiment that needs to be done and that needs to be funded. We want to know about it. So I think that's where we can work a little bit more closely together, where maybe corporate venture doesn't have to be quite so guarded in what might be their strategic areas of focus, or certainly emerging strategic areas of focus.
I always like to say strategic is about deciding what not to do. And for startups, they need to know very quickly when not to spend time. And so they can really spend time where it makes most sense. So now, I forgot to ask, how many portfolio companies do you have today?
Good question. So we have 56 portfolio companies in the seed fund, active companies.
Wow. Okay. So now I'm impressed you waited until 4 months ago to get a portfolio manager.
Exactly. Exactly. It was definitely a resource we badly needed, and we're definitely capitalizing on his value add for sure.
Now, with so many portfolio companies, do you plan any events where they meet together, they can share best practices? Do you have anything that's about building a community between these entrepreneurs?
Yeah, brilliant question. And it's actually it's a work in progress. So we're definitely focusing on building that community, because I think one of the things that's really important at the early stages is feeling like you're not alone, right? You've sort of taken the leap of faith to become the CEO of a company, and you're not alone. There are so many other people that are exactly like you. And so for us, it's very much about creating that safe environment where they can learn from each other. So we do things like introduce our founder CEOs and also management teams to leadership programs, where we actually put cohort companies together. We encourage them to have leadership training or leadership programs where they can engage with each other, learn together, learn to grow together. And that's really nice, because if we ever have an event or a workshop or anything, they come together and they say, hey, I haven't seen you since the last event we were at together or the time we did the leadership training. So that's really nice for us, because as much as we'd like to say that we bring all the value to the teams, we don't, right? They bring value to each other, and there's nothing better than them learning from each other.
Very nice. And when we talk about UK, you mentioned the triangle with Cambridge, Oxford, London. Can you talk a little bit for the audience about which other cities really have good entrepreneurs, good universities, spin-off, and so on? Because we always talk about the triangle, but not beyond, and there's much more to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There's a reason we have a Midlands fund, right? There's a reason we have a regional fund. The level of entrepreneurship and innovation that happens in the Midlands is amazing. And I think there are centers like Birmingham where innovation is actually born out of an industry need. This is where it's very industry rich. It was very manufacturing rich. So there's obviously pain points that come from those sorts of sectors that really drives innovation in those areas. And so there's hotspots like that around the place. So there's things happening in Southampton, which is on the South Coast, and Portsmouth, where there's a rich Navy history in the country. So there's a lot of innovation around those areas. Manchester is another big industry center and hub in the country. So there's a lot of innovation happening up there. And in fact, Bristol, you probably know about Bristol. People probably heard about Bristol. People would know what's happening there. So there are so many hotspots, and I think there's a lot of investment and there's a lot of activity to support innovation ecosystems, particularly in the north, in the UK at the moment.
So you're traveling a lot with your colleagues, getting to meet entrepreneurs locally, checking their lab, their science. So one thing I like about what you described is when you invest, you're already thinking about the next round syndicates. And so maybe this is a good chance for you to share how you think corporate VCs or even VCs should reach out to you and the value you bring. Clearly, you have early access to the full UK, many cities, many entrepreneurs. But what is the value that you bring, and what is the value you expect them to bring?
Yeah, excellent question. I think the value that we bring is, even though we're making seed stage investments, we're looking at companies that are going to grow and that are going to exit, right? So we're thinking about who's the acquirer? Who's going to want this at the end of the day, right? Yeah. So I think we have those conversations very early with the companies. And what's really important for us is that we don't scare our companies and our founders by making them think that they need to know the answers to those questions. They need to think about the questions, and the idea of getting the right seed stage investors and partners on board at the early days is about who's going to help you answer those questions, who's going to build that community and that network around you to help answer those questions. And I think that's where kind of early engagement from CVCs is hugely valuable to investors like us, because we can understand those strategic areas of interest and we can start building pipelines, building portfolios that actually are going to have that kind of growth potential with CVCs are participating at the next round.
Very nice. And then we just set up an office in London, so we are clearly biased, but can you make a pitch why UK versus the rest of Europe, or how do you see it?
Ah, yes. Okay. That is a really tricky question for an Aussie to answer. You know, one of the things that I found when I moved from Sydney to Oxford, I live in Oxford, is I thought I was going to move to an investment community and an innovation community that was so big and so diverse. I'm not going to know anyone. This is going to be really scary and daunting. And it's actually not the case. It's actually quite a small community. It's a very friendly community. People like to work together. People like to invest with each other, and people like to talk to each other. There is still a core group of people who are investing in really nice, exciting technologies, right? And new areas and new innovations. So I think the accessibility in the UK makes it really exciting. Accessibility to entrepreneurs, but accessibility to investors and the excitement of growing companies in the UK. And I think there's huge potential to continue to grow things in the UK. And I think there's hopefully more money coming into the ecosystem to be able to make that happen.
So my last question, Sakura, is what are you excited about next?
What am I excited about next? As a fund, we have lots of new investments to make. We are hunting for new technologies, new innovations, new founders, but we're also hunting for those seasoned and experienced management teams that want to come in and create new companies in the UK. So come and talk to us, come and join us. It would be lovely to be on the journey with you because what we're seeing is loads and loads of opportunity for new spin-outs that we're working with and also some really exciting new companies. So what we would love to do is to see more later stage investment happening in the UK. And so the translational stuff is staying in the UK and companies are continuing to grow. Obviously, there's a natural progression for companies to go global and they might need to set up operations in other parts of the world. But let's actually maximize the potential that's here. Let's continue to grow things and build the teams here and see what we can do within the community that we have.
Very nice. Sakura, thank you for sharing your journey, your insights, and quite a few golden nuggets along the way.
Thank you so much.